Welcome to SFDC Consultant Podcast, the podcast where we have open discussions with Salesforce consultants, architects, and administrators. Today, we're speaking with David Berman, a Salesforce technical architect based in New York that has worked with some of the biggest brands such as Spotify, eBay, and more. In this discussion, we cover the best way to build relationships, the importance of delivering high-quality work, how to build a strong consulting foundation, and how to navigate the big digital transformation project.
My name is David Berman. I'm a Salesforce.com consultant. I've been doing Salesforce work for almost 15 years, mainly for large enterprise clients. And I'm here today to share with you some of my experiences and some of the things that I've learned in terms of just being able to be a successful consultant in the Salesforce world. The beginning of my career, actually, I was not a consultant. To be a consultant, you obviously have to, have some skills, and I didn't have skills, and so I needed some skills. And so when I was a long, long time ago, I worked for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida, or they're now called Florida Blue, and they were a very early Salesforce adopter. In terms of they were running their entire, all their sales and service call centers and back office and marketing automation, all that with the CTI integration and what was then chat, what's now native chat. So I did dozens and dozens of projects over the course of about 4 or 5 years up until we had to retool everything for Obamacare. And so after that amount of time, I kind of got really into Salesforce and got, took all the courses and, got more hands-on. And, I started off more on the business side as an analyst and then a manager of operations for sales and marketing. And little did I realize I would be completely changing my career course and going in the direction of enterprise IT. So once I did, though, it was really cool, and I found that I was able to very easily transition my skills from operations to technology, which was great. After about 4 or 5 years of that and kind of just being involved in the ecosystem, I eventually was sought after and hired by Accenture as a Salesforce.com consultant, and did that for only about 18 months, actually. I found that I really joined Accenture less for the job itself and more to learn consulting. And I'm really happy I chose Accenture. And I was very careful about who I chose, and I'll tell you why. Accenture, so the big ones out there, Accenture, Deloitte, Ernst & Young, KPMG, PricewaterhouseCooper, these are the large consulting companies, and they all have a large IT consulting arm. And they all do Salesforce, and they're all trying to do Salesforce more and more and more as it's the hottest thing out there right now. At Accenture, the way it worked, or the way it worked when I was there, I'm not sure if it works like that anymore. They've had some change in HR leadership, but back in the day, you came onto Accenture as an Accenture employee. That did not mean you were on a project. You had to network within Accenture and find yourself a manager who owned a project, convince them and interview with them that you should be on that project based on your skill set and based on what they need. And this was really great for me. And again, Accenture is not like, yes, they're a microcosm of the world, but there's still 500,000 consultants at Accenture. And in terms of the ecosystem that we are in, that's big. That's real, real big. Obviously, not all of them were Salesforce. Only maybe, 10, 15,000 of them were Salesforce consultants, which is still probably the biggest Salesforce shop on earth today, which was fantastic. And that's really what I needed. I needed to really experience forcing yourself to network, to find the work, and then B, not freaking out when your projects are coming to an end. You're like, oh my God, what's coming next? I have no other income coming in after this is over. So kind of getting, having worked on a few clients, I worked at did some work for Pfizer, for GlaxoSmithKline, for EMC Dell, for Stryker, all while I was at Accenture. And I found those. Those were ones that I found. I networked with the managers and I got onto those projects by exemplifying what I've done. Health and Life Sciences was a natural fit because I had come from Blue Cross Blue Shield. So going into more Health and Life Sciences was a pretty easy sell. And again, coming from pre-cloud Salesforce, where you've lived the evolution. You've lived, you know, Flow was once Informabores, and then it was Firefly, and then it was bought by Salesforce, and then it became Flow, and it took them a while to make it native, and then they kind of half did it, and then it became better. So like, this type of experience is what companies love, because they know that not only are you can equate the stack or the functional to Salesforce capabilities, but you know the competition out there, and you know what else is available, and you understand, again, the stack as opposed to just the platform, which I think is really delineating points that I've kind of used throughout my career and has really resonated with clients a lot. So Accenture was really just to learn the business of consulting, not Salesforce. I already knew Salesforce going in, but of course, every project, you are taking away skills, and you should be. And then you should be putting them on your resume so that everyone else can see that you have more skills. Honestly, I don't sell, I don't market myself at all outside of LinkedIn. I have a LinkedIn profile. You guys can all check it out. David Berman, Salesforce consultant. It's pretty simple, but it shows and highlights all of, you know, most of my major experience. And obviously I can't put everything on there, but I put as much as I can from an IT perspective so that companies understand. Not only am I a Salesforce guy, but I do all the integration work, and I've worked with other platforms as well, bespoke applications from scratch, on-prem, you know, cloud, hybrid, all that good stuff. And so LinkedIn has been a huge tool for me. Most of my customers find me on LinkedIn and contact me through LinkedIn. I can't remember the last time I actually went out and searched for a job. So again, once you've got the experience and you've got kind of that knowledge, people are going to hear about you anyway. Like you're going to become known at Salesforce. You're going to become known in whatever industries you are specializing in eventually. I think the key is it was interesting because I was kind of hot and heavy down the operations path, and I really saw a good solid career in operations. And it really took a little bit of luck to kind of just really invest in Salesforce and go down the Salesforce path. And it's been a while. And so what I'm going to say is that the things that worked for me 5-10 years ago that now are resonating, because again, I now have those years of experience. For those who are new, obviously that's not helpful to you because you don't have those years of experience to call on to attract those clients. So you're going to have to find those clients. At the beginning, they may not want you as a consultant. They may want you as a W-2 full-time employee. I get 70% of my calls, even though they know I'm a consultant, they are going to ask, are you willing to come on full-time as a W-2 employee? To which my answer is typically very politely, I'm flattered. I just, that's just not my path. And that's not what my focuses and goals are surrounding from a career path and work-life balance standpoint. Again, for the new folks out there, that's not going to be helpful because, again, having that many years of experience, I do have some leverage. There are some SKUs that I've worked on that very few others. I have a lot of like B2B commerce cloud experience and cloud craze and Quip and a ton of CPQ experience. I'm like, these are hot, hot, hot right now. And so I get calls all the time for these types, for this kind of work, most of which I have to turn down because I'm too busy. But again, if you can specialize, the more you specialize, the better. Someone once told me at the beginning of my career, actually before my career started, that no one wants a generalist. Okay, lots of people out there can do a lot of things well, but not a lot of people can do something specific better than anybody else. So if you have a skill and you have a specific kind of way and you find a SKU or a product that Salesforce sells, and you're like, this is my baby, let it be marketing cloud, sales cloud, service cloud. It could be even like one of the more common ones. If you're like the guru in field service lightning, for example, I mean, there are companies out there that will pay you an absorbent amount of money for your knowledge and your skills and your experience. So yeah, definitely specialize. The more you specialize, the better. I've been fortunate and have had the opportunities now to go pretty deep into most of the products that Salesforce sells, especially sales service, Lightning, Analytics, Einstein, communities, all the majors. And then all the more specifics, the CBQs, the B2C, the B2B, the manufacturing cloud, the financial services cloud, all that good stuff. Again, I've had experience, some more, some less. The new stuff is always going to be hot for companies. They're always looking for people to come and try and, you know, add support as it applies to the new stuff that not many people have experience in. So if you have experience there and you can get more in that space, do it. I have a lot of experience on the ERP side as well. Again, don't box yourself into Salesforce. Salesforce is only as good as Salesforce. Companies have a stack outside of Salesforce. And if you can't speak SAP, Oracle, PeopleSoft, NetSuite on the, call it ledger, general ledger, sub-ledger side, as well as probably some type of, you know, sales marketing service piece on the front end, you're going to be at a real loss. So I definitely suggest going down that path. Another thing that I definitely suggest is everyone always calls them. They're like, what are you? Are you functional? Are you technical? Right? And it's almost like this black and white, like you can only be one. So I have a really robust background in Lean Six Sigma. I've done a ton of process, continuous improvement work, process engineering work, and I incorporate that into my software development lifecycle at the upfront discovery part and ongoing so that I understand the current state, future state, fit gap analysis. I can quantify and qualify the change. I can justify the value in spending the money up front. I can then trace that value from an actual field or page layout all the way back to a requirement and ultimately to a scope. And so those are some soft skills there, but those soft skills differentiate me from 99.999% of all the SIs out there trying to do this. And I can do it fast and I can do it well. And it's not going to take me 3 months. I don't need to bring in an army to do it. I've worked at Accenture. I know how that is. It's a different feel. It's a different look. Some companies want it. Some companies don't. That's okay. Sometimes I'm part of a team. Sometimes I'm a one-man show. Also okay. Again, you're a consultant. You play the role. You don't play you. Okay? You are you. The role is what you're being paid to do. I've been a PM recently. I could do my own dev. Listen, I played the PM as the PM. I saw opportunity to kind of interject with some of the development stuff, and I did not take it. I escalated it. I brought it up. I raised it as an issue, as a risk, as the PM. But I'm not going to start running in there and saying, hey, guys, your test code coverage sucks. Or, you know, like there are other people that are supposed to be doing that job. So you've got to know your role and play your role. And you've got to be able to do the role too. Just make sure. Like, don't take a job. Like, oh, PM? I can do that. Dude, I'm a freaking analyst. I can do PM easy. You can't. If you haven't done it before and it's a big, big project and you've got a lot of stakeholders and it's like a international, lots of teams, you're going to be in over your head real, real fast. So make sure you know what PM means. Go look up the PMP course, whatever it is. These are the soft skills that kind of surround and cocoon my Salesforce knowledge and experience that really make me more valuable than others who are just purely Salesforce. But then again, you can't just be functional because you got to know Salesforce. And the more technical you are, the more hands-on you are, A, the more valuable you are, but B, the more control you have, right? I found a lot of times there's a lot of projects that I'll go into where the technical team is fantastic, but they're very technical and they have no functional prowess whatsoever. And they really need a lot of handholding there so that they do the right development and give you the right UI, UX that you actually need. And if I couldn't do that and I couldn't dig in and be like, oh, okay, hey, don't use this over here. Let's do it like this. And I'll just write it myself. If I couldn't do that or I couldn't read that code or I didn't know what that meant, I'd be beholden to somebody else for the quality of my work. I don't like that. I like to be the owner of my stuff. And if I mess up, I'll own it. But if I can prevent it, I will. So the more you know, the more hands-on you are, the more you're able to control your own destiny as it applies to the quality of your own work. In terms of some of the other soft skills that I think is important as a consultant is really making sure that you and your customer are very clear on the scope of your work and what your role and responsibilities are and the role and responsibilities of other people in a very tangible way. Meaning if you have to go through a project plan and say, this is mine, this is hers, this is his, you have to do that. Advertising and marketing yourself happens on the projects. my calling card is not, I don't have cards. My calling card is my work. If my work sucks, or I didn't build good rapport with a client, or they hated my guts, it's going to be bad for me. And I'm not going to, they're possibly going to tell other people. It'll hurt my reputation. And it may hurt me being able to get more work in the future. So you really need to make sure that you're taking on work that A, you can succeed in fulfilling and delivering to the client, and B, you can do so in a way that is going to not burn bridges when this project's done, right? You want to be able to make sure that when they need, they will call you up to rehire you again, or they will, you can use them as a reference in the future. I always ask clients if I can use them as a reference as I'm rolling off projects, which you need to do, because, and oftentimes it's better to do in writing, because we all sign NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, as part of our contracts for these. And if you don't ask sometimes in writing and you just throw it up on your LinkedIn, you may be surprised when you get a nice little letter in the mail getting sued for breaching your non-disclosure agreement. So don't go breaching non-disclosure agreements in public without asking first. So there have been some times that I've done some work for some, I say not smaller clients, but they've been smaller roles for the most part. Oops. And, or not smaller roles, but like some dev roles and just some things where the client wasn't happy. Not with the work, but with something else about the project. And we parted ways. And the client owed me a fair amount of money, you know, over $10,000, let's say. Okay. And they didn't want to pay it. And they weren't going to pay it. And I'm one guy. And for me to just have a lawyer send a letter is going to probably be a $5,000 to $10,000 retainer just for that. And so it was gone. It was money that I could not recoup. And there's nothing I could do about it. And I wasn't willing to like risk my reputation to try and recoup this money. It happens. It sucks. It's the worst thing for the big guy to bully the little guy into, hey, you have code that you're now using. It's my intellectual property that I own, and now you're using it and you haven't paid for it. It is not yours. You can't just go shut them down. You can't. They're big. They have a team of lawyers. You don't. You're one person. So sometimes, unfortunately, you got to know when to bite the bullet and take one for the team. You know?
Yeah. I was going to say to that, because there's probably a gigantic difference between kind of your very small, you know, implementation that you do for, the company in the corner of the street, that type of thing, versus where you do an international project, you know, cross-system, cross-platform integrations and all of that. And then you're dealing with other stakeholders. And there's probably, I don't know, in my mind, somehow the bigger projects are in a way safer. That's how I'm thinking. You know, people kind of, you're more likely to, I guess, for a multinational company, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $50,000 or pounds or euros, that may not be as much of a dent for them than a smaller organization. But in terms of the bigger teams and bigger projects, I wanted to just touch upon that, because, you know, by just looking at your experience and only, like I said, only just the things that you were able to reference. That's a breadth of experience. That's you know, that's a whole bucket of big names and big organizations and big roles that you've had. My question from there would be, how does one adapt to that? Because I presume that if you join company A for, you know, 3 to 8 months, 3 to 9 months, and then you switch and you move to company B, all of that, even though you're there for a short or a small period of time, in a way you kind of do need to adapt slightly, presumably, to the culture of that team or to the culture of that company. How challenging or how important is that?
It's really important to fall into their rhythm. You know, I again, to your point, I've worked on a lot of large projects with a lot of personalities and a lot of people. And sometimes you align and you mesh naturally, and sometimes you don't. I found that regardless, again, it's your role. You know your role. If you're the solution architect, you know you're going to be leading conversations with the client, capturing requirements, helping understand kind of the function and the process of what's going on. And you're going to have to work with both the client and internally with your own team to then, A, work with, let's say, the analyst putting together the SDLC documentation, and you're going to work with the technical architect and development team to make sure that they're, you know, fulfilling the requirements functionally, and you're going to work with the testers to make sure that they're testing, and you're going to apply tests yourself. And so your interface in a role is really more about the people are important, but your function and what you're fulfilling and your obligations are more important. And so if that's your focus and your focus is just to be successful, then you're going to, and you obviously know the role and responsibilities of the other people on the team that you need to interface with, that's really going to be everything. You're going to have to sometimes hold your tongue in certain instances when someone rubs you the wrong way. You're a consultant. It's not personal. It's business. And if you want this client to hire you again, you need to play nice. And that person that is maybe talking to you in a way that you don't appreciate may not be around the next time around. So it may not really behoove you to try and put that person in their place as opposed to just being, you know, courteous, understanding, apologetic if need be. Egos are not fun to bring into consulting gigs. It will not bode well for you. Drop the ego. And guys, I know you're brilliant, okay? If you weren't smart, you wouldn't be doing this. You're smart people, and I get it. But there's a fine line, and you have to understand when. And I'll have these conversations with clients and say, you've hired me to help you by bringing my experience and knowledge into a situation. If a client is very combative and doesn't want to hear me out when I know it's the best practice and I know like there's nothing to talk about, I'm not going to get upset in the moment or raise my voice, because again, this is not an emotional transaction for me. I'm really trying to do the best for the client, and I'm trying to do the best work I can so that that calling card looks as good as it possibly can. So I think that you're going to run into personalities that don't rub. I'll give you a great example. I was on a large international Veeva project for a gigantic, one of the Big Ten pharma companies. And I was in charge of the US from a solution architecture perspective. I was the US, Canada, Mexico, North America, whatever guy. And I had to play with the people from the other regions of the world, which that was great. My issue was there was a PM that was on that project that thought he was the technical architect as well, which is fine. He was a very technical guy. And he was not polite. He was very rude, not just to us, but to the client as well. And it was someone that I had to play nice with for 5 or 6 months, day in and day out. I saw this person physically every single day. And I think as long as I made sure to focus on doing the best justice for the client and fulfilling my role and responsibilities for the project, I couldn't have an ego. I really couldn't do anything other than just put my head down, focus, work. It's not fun. It's one of the, you know, not as fun parts of the job. But you sometimes have to take the good with the bad. The fun part of the job for me, honestly, is learning. I get to go to all these different companies and learn how they work or don't work, or how 5 different companies in the same industry that sell the exact same thing do so differently and take risks differently and have different sales tactics and different territory breakdowns and different commission and payment structures. And I mean, it's unbelievable. So to me, I love it because I'm able to learn fast, understand function quickly, and then turn it into technology. And I'm sure that's what most of you are also good at, which is why you do this or want to do this. I say the market's getting a little bit full right now. When I was first doing this, no one was doing Salesforce work. And I was one of a very small, probably a few thousand people in the world that had the kind of the years of experience and breadth of and depth of experience that I have. It's growing. There's a lot of us now. There's a lot of us who are big and have done big projects and big name stuff that you've seen, that you know, that if you go onto the web, you probably see on a regular basis. And so what I'm going to say is that it's a good bandwagon to jump on. It is. how long is it going to last? I don't know. Those of you who are a little bit older and have lived through, let's say, the Siebel era, Siebel was the first real mature mainstream enterprise level CRM. It was mainstream for 20 to 30 years until it was eventually replaced. I'm not sure that Salesforce is as replaceable as Siebel, but in my opinion, and from what I've seen from technology just cyclically in the last 50 years, nothing lasts forever. And so while Siebel's still around, and a lot of big companies are not going to replace it anytime soon, and Salesforce is in that boat from an enterprise perspective, I'm honestly, especially out of India, seeing massive numbers of people wanting to focus on Salesforce, which is great. I love that the community is growing. I love that everyone has kind of felt the fire, felt the ohana of Salesforce, which is fantastic. But at the same time, you got to be realistic, guys. There's other technologies out there, peripheral technologies that complement Salesforce or that live in the ecosystem. And if you can become an expert in some of those things, again, as it applies to Salesforce, keeping Salesforce, you know, at the forefront, because that's going to be your ticket, right? Any company that uses Salesforce is going to be looking for that Salesforce on your resume. It's got to be on there. But if you've got the other stuff too, that's going to, I feel, be your real differentiator moving forward. Up until now, you could just say Salesforce and everyone jumped. Saying Salesforce now is still, they'll jump, but not if you don't have the other experiences along with it. You've got to get that experience. For those who have no experience and are learners, taking trailheads, doing the grind, trying to get that first project, that first experience, it's hard, legitimately. Like, it's hard, and like, there's no kind of short, easy way around it. I find that breaking in is going to probably be the hardest thing and only going to get harder moving forward. For those who are students in college, find those internships. Again, I mentioned those companies before, Accenture, KPMG, Ernst & Young, PricewaterhouseCooper. There's a bunch of these companies out there. Apply for their internship programs if you're in school or, yeah, if you're in college. They will teach you everything you need to know, teach you about consulting, and give you a job as long as you're not a complete idiot once you're done with college. And from there, if you have big four, big five, whatever, however many big ones there are now, experience, you're hot. You're hot. Everyone's going to want you. You're going to get blown up from HCL and Cognizant and TCS and all these other guys who are looking to snatch up these Salesforce resources. They're going to find you. So if you can get that type of experience, do it. For those who can't, there's a lot of charity work out there, a lot, that you can tap into. So I say there's a ton of non-for-profits looking for Salesforce people. They're not super picky, obviously, because they don't have a lot of money to work with. If you can find a nonprofit or a non-for-profit that's looking for Salesforce people, and by the way, almost all of them use Salesforce, go for it. Just when you do, publicize the crap out of it. Like, post it on your LinkedIn, post it everywhere, tell Salesforce, because like that 111 thing, it's a big deal, and Salesforce thinks it's a big deal, and they're going to try and promote you if they know that you're someone that is doing this. Which brings me kind of to my last real nugget, which is get to know Salesforce, the people at Salesforce. The most important people at Salesforce to get to know are the sales reps, the ones who are the RVPs, the SVPs, the IVPs, whatever the VPs are, right? The ones that are managing all. So the way that Salesforce works, it's by territory, by SKU. So if you're a health cloud guy and you live in New York, find the health cloud guy in your area and you will get work. You may not be an SI and Salesforce may not get money out of you, but there are companies out there that can't afford or don't want an SI or that have had a bad experience with an SI that Salesforce brought into the table. That, by the way, I get a lot of work that way. When an SI messes up and they need someone cheap and nimble to come in and just fix it, if you're that one-man show who they know can just do it, you're going to get a lot of calls as well. Won't be that work's not usually the most fun work, but it's good work. And oftentimes they're willing to pay for it because they need it. Salesforce. Definitely invest in like going out to coffee, helping Salesforce sell licenses. Salesforce will bring you into deals. say, hey, you're a B2B commerce cloud expert. Please come in with me and help me sell this. You have hands-on experience. You know more than me. Salesforce sales reps, most of them are young, and they have not worked at Salesforce for a very long time. They have a lot of turnover at Salesforce because they have very high quotas, and it's very hard to hit those quotas. So a lot of them quit, or they'll move on, or they'll move up, or whatever the case may be. So you need to constantly keep this network going with Salesforce because they're going to also be a fantastic source of work for you as your career develops. And again, it's one of those things where the more you specialize, the better. Again, if you are the B2B commerce guy and you're in Chicago, I'll tell you who to call. Like, I know the guy. We closed a couple of big deals together in 2018, 2020, 2019. When he needs someone to help close a deal, he will call me up. And when the deal is closed and they need the SI or someone to start doing the work, 8 times out of 10, I'm getting that deal. So it really behooves you to get to know Salesforce. Go to Dreamforce, go to the local Salesforce conventions in your cities. I always go to the New York. I live in New York. There are 2 conventions at the Javits Center every year. I go Connections and whatever the other one's called. I always go to both, no matter what. I don't even go to see clients. I go to see Salesforce and recruiters who obviously are also waiting for you, salivating as you're walking in the door. So make sure you keep your recruiters and your Salesforce reps happy.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I was going to say in terms of knowing Salesforce and the fact that how they work, they have the regions and then afterwards they're specialized in sectors and all that. I think I have heard that before in terms of basically they're the guys that are selling the licenses potentially to companies that do not have Salesforce staff. To be honest, one of my contracts, that's how I got one of my contracts. They were selling it into central government. And afterwards I knew the guy and he called and said, yeah, are you interested in a contract? These guys are trying to implement Salesforce. They have no Salesforce staff. And it was my first contract ever. And I said, yeah, let's give it a roll. The one thing I was going to kind of pick up part of something that you said in terms of the pleasures of this, because you said, there are a few things you had to kind of bite your tongue a few times or, around the way in order for you to kind of keep yourself clean in a way, not to have that bad blood. But there has to be a positive to this. So I guess, something probably on the side that is probably a bit known by the community, the compensation usually that comes part of a, that's pretty, coming up pretty good in terms of comparing with other clouds or anything like that. So that could be one of the reasons why you see an influx of people trying to get into the industry. But the second thing that you mentioned that, there's a bit of satisfaction there is, getting to understand these companies, getting to see different versions of the same thing in a way, see how people kind of try to sell the same thing in different ways. So I was going to try to kind of understand, from your point of view, how easy do you think has become for you while having this breadth of experience behind you is to adapt and understand to the different objectives that people are trying to solve? Because, sometimes you have a common ground, such as, everyone needs Sales Cloud and everyone needs Service Cloud. But actually, if you just delve a bit deeper into that, there are different business processes, there are different business models, different sales, processes, et cetera. So I guess it is important to understand how the company runs in order to, provide the best advice.
Yeah. And not only how the company runs, but the culture of the business itself. I'll give you an example. I'm doing some work now for a very large company that has a sales model where the salespeople don't work directly for them. They're independent brokers. And you'll find there's lots of businesses like that, insurance, but this happens to be a manufacturer that makes actual physical things, and the people that sell it are going and buying those things from a middleman, from a wholesaler of their products. But still, this company is tracking these salespeople and tracking their sales and their progress and a whole bunch of other things, and it's really different. Like, it's not a normal sales process cycle. They don't care about certain things about the sales process itself because, again, they're not their own employees. And as opposed to companies where another company sells the exact same thing, has an internal sales team that they hire that are their employees, and they have inventory that they get right from their warehouse, and everything is easily much more easily tracked, and everything is very transparent. And so, yeah, there are massive differences. And I'd say understanding functional capabilities and being able to know where they apply is important. Understanding the nuances of both process and culture, that takes a little bit of time, and you've got to learn it, because if you don't learn it, you're going to build something that doesn't work for them. UI UX is a big, it's a thing. It's not just, hey, let's make the page layout like this. Page layouts and UI UX are really important, and there are people who, like, that's all that they do. They're just UI UX people. They specialize in just that as a career. And so the better you can get at, and the more experience you can get on the UI UX side, like, find some guru. I have a couple of friends in the industry who are creatives. So they are not Salesforce people. They just do digital. They make things look pretty on screens. Okay. And so I go to them all the time for, like, color schemes and font sizes and types and thicknesses and depths and colors. Like, I don't know this. I didn't know this stuff going into this. I know data. I know process. I know technology. UI, I don't care how the screen looks. Does it work? Does it do what you want? Does the button work? Does the workflow work? Then who cares, right? It's like, no, some companies actually care. And actually, I will get some work now, especially for Lightning and especially for mobile, just doing UI. Just, that's it. Like, I just had a smaller SI call me to have me do some work for another very large pharma company that they won this project but didn't have the skills to do the UI UX or the UI customization on Lightning Web Components. And so that's all I did. It was like a couple of weeks, 40, 50 hours, just cleaning up pages, making them look, the styling, some CSS, some, you know, just some little things here and there, and that was 50 hours of work. So if you can get good at the creative side over the years, it'll bode well for you, because then everyone will be super impressed that not just is your work good, fast, accurate, functional, but it's pretty too. It goes a long way, definitely.
Yeah. I was going to say, to be honest, I have had some personal experience when it comes to that. In terms of, well, you know, what should we prioritize? We have a very, very tight deadline. What should we prioritize? Is it making it work or making it pretty? And the answer was making it pretty rather than making it work, because, you know, that had to be shown to someone. You know, it wasn't really, you know, no one was doing a demo. People just needed screenshots or things like that. You know, there were some stakeholders somewhere that needed to see something look pretty. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to ask in terms of finding work and in terms of, you know, keeping those relationships, quote unquote, kind of, you know, linked when it comes to that is, how do you usually, when it comes to contracting, how do you usually kind of plan, not really kind of time manage yourself, like time management, but how do you kind of plan contracts? Because, you know, at the end of the day, you're just one man in a way, and, you know, depending on circumstances, you know, you want to have a potentially like a work-life balance, but even with that, you know, there's, you want to enjoy yourself as well. So my question is, how do you do the segues between one contract and the other? How does that work for you?
So I'm a little bit insane. I'm a massive workaholic, and I have two parts of my business. I do have a team in Pune, in India, that does straight dev work for me, and I will get. They're fantastic. They're mostly ex Accenture senior developers, very good English. They've done work for the big Fortune 500s as well, very successfully. And so these are guys who I will hire. I have a line of my work that I just do straight dev work for companies. So companies looking for Salesforce or any stack dev work. there I do offer these services, and then there's my own projects that are just mine. And I'm very transparent with clients about, hey, I have a number of concurrent clients that we are doing development for through this team, and I have my own client, usually one project that is mine that I am playing an active daily role in a project. And so I think that for me, there's less of a transition now because I have ongoing work all the time and ongoing income from those things. So I don't really think of it as a transition. But for me, if I can go straight from it's Friday and I'm ending one project to it's Monday and I'm starting a new one, that's ideal for me. I don't need a break. I don't need time. That said, I have a lot of friends. I can name some on here who are on LinkedIn who are also independent consultants and have been doing this for a long, long time. They'll take a couple months. They'll go to Bali or, I don't know, Bahamas or wherever, because they just made a whole bunch of money over the last few months, and they're good. So they'll go on vacation and come back when they feel like, you know, they found another project that suits their lifestyle, you know? Teach their own. The key is don't panic. Finding work is a full-time job. For those who are not getting bombarded by recruiters day and night, finding work is a full-time job. As your project's coming close to an end, you need to commit the hours and make the phone calls and send the emails to get that next contract going in a time that is comfortable for you. If you don't, no one's doing it for you.
I think
eventually you will, after time, like for me now, again, I get bombarded by recruiters day and night. I don't need to look for work. It finds me, but I'm picky about the projects that I take. I can't take a project that like has meetings all day, every day. I don't have that kind of bandwidth because I'm trying to support a bunch of a DevOps team that may have questions, that may have concerns, that I would be in their stand up for, you know, like there are things that come up. So I'm very careful to not kind of bite off more than I can chew from a time bandwidth perspective. You only have so many hours in the day. Do not burn yourself out because you will, and it's easy to. Trust me, very easy.
Yeah, I was gonna say around that, because there are probably two sides of this. I mean, I remember when I started with an ISV, I kind of did the same thing, because you know, you kind of do the 9 to 5, and then you kind of get home. Well, should I finish that piece of work that I started? Should I prep for tomorrow? You know, and then you kind of end up on something, I don't know, like Trailhead, or you kind of, you know, end up in some type, and then it's 11 o'clock at night. And you know, you kind of do that for a few months, and afterwards you're just like sick of it. It's just like, it doesn't feel right. And then technically that just has like a domino effect in, you know, the rest of your life. I think some of the things that you mentioned there are quite key, and thank you for that. The last thing probably I was going to say from my side, in terms of, because you mentioned like for people that are in college or people that you know, kind of people that are just starting, I was going to say specifically for people that are potentially switching careers. So they're probably 3, 5, 7, 10 years into a certain career. How would you approach that? How would you advise someone either switching to contracting, or, you know, switching to Salesforce and however path they take as full-time or, you know, potential contracting. But specifically to that, you know, how, you know, should people kind of stick to what they know as an industry, or, you know, the fact that they're trying to make a career change, they probably kind of look and see what's available basically.
I think it really is objective and subjective to the individual. I know people who are lawyers who have dropped law and are now Salesforce people. I'm doing Salesforce projects and training and certain things. Find your niche. Understand, okay, the software development life cycle requires a whole bunch of different skills. You may not be the developer. You may be the analyst. You may be the trainer. You may be the tester. You may be the documentation guy. You may be the product owner, whatever the case may be. You got to find your niche. You got to find your power, your skills, and apply to the software development lifecycle skills that are required to be successful. So what I'll say is that obviously networking begins as close as possible to where we currently are. So if I have a job in a current industry that I know well, and I know people in the industry, I'm going to probably focus on that industry at first because it's what I know. I'm probably going to try and at the same time branch out, but I'm obviously going to start at home, and then I'm going to move out of home as, you know, opportunities present themselves. I'm choking here. So yeah, in terms of the changing of the careers, start with what you know. If you're in school, internships, honestly, start just finding, look for internships, even unpaid internships, where you get to do your thing, whether you're a developer or an analyst or a PM, where you get experience. Anything you can do, put that company's name on your LinkedIn account, show that you did Salesforce work there, and you know, for X amount of time, and kind of be specific about it. And again, like, I try to keep mine as pared down as possible because mine's long and I have a lot of experience. If you don't, go down in my, if you look at my Blue Cross Blue Shield experience, that was at the very beginning. I blew that out like pages and pages and pages of stuff because like that's all I had. So it's what resonated with Accenture, obviously, and other companies that tried to hire me at that time. But like, you've kind of got to really highlight yourself and really market yourself at the beginning very, very well. I'll tell you, India does this really well. I get hit up for connection requests, which unfortunately I can't take anymore because they only let you have a certain amount on LinkedIn. But I get LinkedIn requests from probably every tech student in India. I swear. I mean, it seems that way. But like, I mean, I used to think that MIT was like our MIT in the US. I didn't realize that that was like Mahindra Institute of Technology or whatever it stands for. Like, these people are all over my LinkedIn from like freshman year of college. Some of these kids are in high school trying to create their network. Okay. I know Tony Owens. I know like the CEOs and a lot of the presidents at Salesforce because like I've grown up with this stuff. So when I really, really, really need something and someone's like, oh my God, I can't get this done, I can call people at Salesforce who no one else can call and say, hey, I need your help. And they'll usually help me. But that takes, you've got to network. You've got to get yourself out there and find people like me. I always have, like, I'm always bombarded by recruiters. I know all the jobs out there right now. I know all the work that's being done, in, at least in the US, by most of the Fortune 500 companies. If you're looking for work, I probably can, you know, point you in a direction, send you an email from some recruiter that I got sent or some email within the last 24 hours that is relevant and they're looking at it, it's hot and they need it now. So I say for all those folks, it's hard. It's going to be an uphill battle. Skill up. You want to get in, be better than me. I'm not the best. Trust me. I've met people who are way better than I am, even though I have all this experience and have all this behind me and under my belt. There are guys who blow me out of the water who are half my age. Be that person. There's no reason why you can't. I'm a dinosaur compared to you. Go out there, learn all the stuff that I don't know, which there's lots out there that I don't know, and go get those jobs, go get those roles. They don't want to be paying my high fees if they can pay a little bit less for you and you know more than me. Again, that's how it's going to be. That's how we all start. So I'd love to see an influx of really high-skilled young people come into the industry right now. I'm seeing a lot of unskilled folks coming in, especially from some of the other countries, which is, I mean, not scary for me, but scary for companies, which is why they're so weary about consultants sometimes, because they have been burned. Don't be that guy. Don't be the person that comes in and bites off more than you can chew, promise more than you can do. You know what you can do. You know the roles and skills that you are able to fulfill. If you mess this up once, it's usually a one and done. Like, it's your reputation. No one really cares about anything else at this point from a Salesforce perspective about what you can do and your ability to fulfill your promise and your contract. So that's really, really important. The last thing I'll say on the soft skill side, because I totally glossed over it and I didn't even really mention it, is change management. Change is pain, period. If you are a good agent of change and you understand what a user adoption truly means in the industry and in the work culture that you are trying to automate or streamline or standardize or normalize or optimize or whatever it is, it and you do it in a way that makes change easy and makes adoption easy, they are going to call you back. They're going to make sure you're part of their whatever it is for a lot as long as possible, because that's something that very, very few do well. And the ones that do are expensive. So if you can be that one man show that wears all the hats, that does it all end to end, great. If you can do little pieces of it, know what you can do, know what you can't do, and never go into a project where you're really overcommitting. Stretch roles are fine. Stretch roles are good. You've never done a field service Lightning, but you've done Service Cloud. You kind of know how Lightning Web Components work. You've done it. Like, that's a good stretch role. You can figure that piece out. If you're going into CPQ and you've never done it before, step away. Just step away. If you've never touched ERP or accounting functions or any of those types of things before, and you're going, and then they're like, oh, we need someone to help us out with the CPQ project, don't do it. Just don't do it. It's not going to end well, and you're going to ruin your reputation. And it's as big as this industry is, it's so small and it's so incestuous. So do not burn those bridges.
Yeah, that's good advice. Last thing from my side, anything that you would want to kind of, you know, part with, you know, you mentioned earlier your LinkedIn, and also I think from my side and for everyone that's, you know, the listening to this, big thank you. I think you've kind of literally just thrown a bucket of things over in terms of insights and of course kind of your backing that up with examples, which actually is very, very important.
Yeah, no, for sure. I really appreciate the time, actually. I don't usually do this, but I feel it's important. I feel that I get hit up by so many people asking, how do I break into this industry? And I see so many people looking for work, and there is a way. So if you have the will and you have the time, you can do it. There's nothing stopping you. Just like there was nothing stopping me. I'm no smarter or better than anybody else. I promise. You're probably smarter than me. So, it's just a matter of know your personality, know how you can fit in, and know where you can add value, and then show it. And once you do, they'll pay you a lot.
Thank you for listening to the SFDC Consultant Podcast. Be sure to visit sfdcconsultant.com to access the show notes and discover additional content. If you enjoy the podcast, it would be amazing if you could subscribe, give us a review, and share it with your peers. Until next time, take care.